Kevin Weeks, former NHL goaltender, now at the NHL Network and rumored to be heading to the Four Letter Network as part of their hockey coverage in the future. Kevin, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
Appreciate that. Thanks, man. Hopefully everybody's doing well out in BC. But yeah, everything's good here in New York and Jersey. Thanks so much.
I'm glad to hear that. And you're probably like some of the other guests we've brought on that are rumored to be going to the Four Letter Network. Can't confirm or deny, though, if that's true. Boy, that sounds like a nice opportunity.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, you know what? I think the biggest thing for me since I started 12 years ago in the business is just doing as much as I can to learn as much as I can to improve in the craft and be as great as I can to serve the game and the great fans and our corporate partners and stuff. So it's been a long 12 years. And my first, I guess, 6 years, I was doing NHL Network 5 days a week, flying to the West Coast, off in van, Edmonton or Calgary or wherever that West Coast game was for hockey night, doing the game, flying back by coastal and back on the air, usually the next morning, Monday, or the next day rather, Monday. So it's been a lot. I've done a lot of media, a lot of TV, but I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. And you know, I look forward to what the future holds here between that network and potentially continuing on at NHL Network as well. So it's a pretty awesome time now for our sport and our league. Between ESPN and TNT with the new media rights here in the U.S. and the NHL Network, too. It's never happened before when all those rights have come due at the same time. So it'll be great on all those platforms so our NHL fans can continue to consume our sport and watch our amazing players, like your Matthew Barzal, who's a Vancouver kid with the Islanders.
Boy, is he ever, and boy, did he come to life in that series when they needed him to, and they did it on the power play, which ended up really tipping this series in favor of the Islanders. Kevin Weeks joining us this morning on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. You got into media fresh off of your career in the National Hockey League, and I find you a really interesting guy to ask about the New York Islanders because you played for them, you also played for the Rangers, you also played for Lou Lamoriello and the Devils. How did you view the New York Islanders during your playing days, Kevin?
It was interesting. I love playing for all three of the area teams here, but from the Islanders specifically to start with, it was interesting because we were just kind of, you know, a group of young players and misfits. And for a lot of us, we were just still cutting our teeth in the league. And it gave us the opportunity to do that and also the opportunity to do it in New York. And, you know, the franchise that was on hard times at the time, but had so much amazing history. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but the great Billy Smith was my first NHL goalie coach. The Islanders, Billy Smith, when I was drafted by the Florida Panthers. And had not for Billy, talent aside, he really helped shape me and my mentality and stuff to help get me to the league. So, and the great late Bill Torrey, who was the architect of that team, of that Islanders dynasty, he was our first kind of president down in Florida with the Panthers during the expansion era too. So, and then getting a chance to play for them, what's cool is, you know, everybody obviously loves the Rangers. It's original six, the prestige, the history, Madison Square Garden, and then obviously the Devils under the great Lou Lamoriello at that time. So it was really cool. We're certainly maybe third on the mantle here, but a very passionate fan base, as you can see, especially now that the team is relevant and good again and playing as well as they are. It's one of those teams where outside of playing for the Islanders, you don't get as much respect, even though it's a New York area team. But you're very aware of the tradition and the history. And yesterday we had the great Brian Trotsche. We had him on for a pregame interview yesterday, and just hearing his stories, and as I said, having played for Bill Torrey and knowing Billy Smith and a lot of the other people in that historic part of that organization, it's pretty special.
And the reason that those Islanders great teams of the 80s continually had to be referenced is because the present wasn't good enough to talk about, so it was always about
exactly.
What had been done as opposed to what
totally.
Is being done. So you tell me, how do you look at the New York Islanders now compared to then?
I mean, I think in our time, anyway, we had a lot of us that were young players, Dave Scatchard, Bill McCault, a guy by the name of Roberto Luongo is my goalie partner for a little bit, who you all should know very well up there, one of the best to ever do it. And some other young players, as I said, we were just finding our way. But this current iteration of the team now, where they've come to and the point that where they're at, what I love about them is, and I can share this with the viewers and the listeners rather, the great Lou Lamoriello, I said I had a chance to play for him too in Jersey. And what I loved about Lou is he's a people first person. He's old school family, old school Italian, treats his staff, the entire staff, the players, the trainers, everything's first class, every detail, every thread on every jersey. is hyper attention to detail, which is the way I'm wired. And I really respect that about him. And in a business where we don't really always have the most honesty, and maybe people are a little short on the people side, I guess, in terms of how they treat people, lose such a breath of fresh air. And he expects attention to detail and respect to the craft and hard work and respect to the sport and your teammates and everything else. But he really creates and fosters a family-like atmosphere for excellence. And that's why he's gone on to be, in my money, one of the best GMs, not only in the history of our league, but in all of sport, for sure. He's one of the hardest senior executives I've ever seen. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, when we played in Jersey, for example, we would come off a road trip sometimes, and we would, you know, we'd pull up to the bus, and pull up off the bus, rather, and we'd look up as we're getting in our cars. It's 2:30 in the morning. It's 3:30 in the morning. And the lights on in Lou's office. And it wasn't performative. Like, he was going back to work. So he sets that tone, and he expects that, but he also exemplifies that. And I remember talking to him before they hired Barry Trotz. I'm like, Lou, you got to hire Trotzy. Like, Trotzy's the man. I can't believe Washington's going to be so cheap and not pay him fair market value. And so said, so done. They ended up hiring Barry Trotz and Lane Lambert and my buddy John Gruden as the assistant coaches. And they've just put together an amazing program in 3 short years. They built an amazing program, no entitlement, no cheating the game, all integrity, all work ethic, all team, all family, and commitment to excellence. And it's great to see what's happening for them. They're great people.
And Kevin, you know, you mentioned the respect that Lou Lamoriello has for everyone and the way he treats people and how positive that is. And we hear a lot of the same things about Barry Trotz from players who have played under him, right? That he's an incredible people person. He treats you with that respect. How important is it to have that kind of an alignment of values from the general manager, the head executive in Lou Lamoriello, and Barry Trotz, the coach? It seems like when those guys are on the same page, it just flows down through the rest of the organization as well.
It's so true. It's a great question. I mean, look, here's one of the things. And, you know, I see there's a lot of inflammatory stuff on social, and unfortunately, a lot of it is directed at players and people in the business. And, you know, I've seen this, and I've been on the wrong side of this myself, too, at different times. Here's the thing. When you come from a family where, you know, those values are upheld and you live those in your family, that sets the tone for everything. And if you know anything about hockey or sports in general, you know that really at the root of it is family, and not the yelling, you know, buffoon parent that's at the game watching their daughter's game, or the clown that's in the stands acting like a fool, or the hyper negative media person, or anything of that effect. But, you know, when you go to any local rink, if you go to 8 rinks, or you're in Kamloops, or anywhere you go, you'd see families, you'd see people united, you see grandmothers, grandfathers, you see aunts, uncles, and you know that they're all a part of that progression. And no player, no person gets there alone. You know, I would never be here without, you know, without the help of my mom and dad and my sister and now, you know, the second part of our family. I would never be here without that. And when you have somebody like Lou and Barry Trotz that foster that and that exemplify that and live that and cultivate that, you're insulated in the right environment. And they're going to tell you when you're wrong. And they're going to hold you accountable, but they're also going to nurture you, and, you know, they're going to amplify the good things you're doing. They're going to encourage you to be better, and that you can't ask for a better atmosphere than that. And I got to tell you, like, playing for the Devils for Lou, I had that, and other places I had that, in Carolina, for example, Tampa. There's other places that I played where I really had that, and that's really a big part of those teams' success, not only your individual success, but more importantly, team success. But what happens is, you don't always have managers or coaches that are that way. You know, you don't always have managers and coaches and people that treat people that way. And then a lot of times, a lot of the fans are like, hey, what happened to our team? What happened? What do you mean what happened? Like, they didn't treat the players properly, or they didn't treat the coach properly, or the trainer, or they didn't pay them fair market value, or they're, you know, you saw what happened in Philly this year, for example, with what Alan Vigneault did to Carter Hart. Like, twice publicly, and it was inaccurate. Like, Carter Hart is one of the hardest working young players in the league. He's an upstanding young goalie. You know, you should know he played in the Dub, played just south of you guys in Everett in the Dub for the Silver Tips. One of the best 3 years in WHL history, came into the league at 20, was excellent for the Flyers. And of course, this was a down season for him and a down season for the team. And he just got eviscerated in the media by the coach. And, you know, all the insinuating about his work ethic and all those things, which are totally untrue, just fabrications and exaggerations. And, you know, so you'd never see that from Lou Lamoriello or Barry Trotz. I'll put it to you that way. You'd never, ever see that, ever. And that's a big part of why they've had the success that they have.
Sorry to cut you off there, Kevin.
As well. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, and just sticking on the Islanders for a second again, you know, the thing that jumps out to me when I watch them is they are so committed to their identity and their style of play, right? And, it's not always the prettiest, but it's incredibly successful and it gets results. How difficult is it for a coach to get a team to buy into that identity, you know, not just for one playoff series, but we're talking about over a period of multiple years that Barry Trotz has got them to buy into that?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So we were just talking about that. So I remember talking to Barry Trotz. We get off the air, Stanley Cup final, Washington and Vegas, and we get off the air. You know, we get back to the hotel, some of us on the NHL Network, and we're hanging, and Trotz's there. And, you know, I've had different buddies that have played for Trotz since I was in the American League in, like, 1995 in the AHL. And so we go over to Trotz, like, Trotz, congrats, man. This is amazing. So happy for you guys and your group. He's like, guys, sit down. You got the Stanley Cup. He's like, guys, sit down. Let's talk. So I asked him, I said, so what was your main message to the team? He goes, you know what, Weeksy, when I took over the team, the first thing I said is, you guys have had some really good years here, and I'm going to tell you guys this. If you want to go somewhere fast, go alone. If you want to go somewhere far, we got to go as a group. We got to go as a collective, as a team, as a unit. And you guys have had some really good years in Washington, but you haven't been able to win the Cup yet. So I'm going to take you guys as a group tomorrow. This is what he said when he first took over. He's like, I'll take you guys as a group. We're going to go to the Washington Monument. We're going to pay tribute to those that have passed, you know, our warriors and members of the armed forces that have passed at the Washington Monument. We're going to take a team picture, and we're going to remember this picture because we win the Stanley Cup together. We're coming back and taking a picture. I almost started crying. I got goosebumps listening to him talk. Like, I never even played for him, and I was getting goosebumps. And so said, so done. So he said, now we've accomplished the mission. We've won the Cup as a group. When we go back to D.C., we're going back to that Washington Monument to take the pictures. So that just goes to show. And I think Barzal's a great example. Like, obviously, he did it in Washington with Ovi and Backstrom and Carlson and those amazing players. But he's doing that with your B.C. native and Matthew Barzal as well. Like, I've loved Barzal since he was in Seattle in junior in the Dub. And he's so electrifying to watch. But his thing was, Barry Trotz's thing to him was like, hey, Barzy, you're electrifying. We know how dynamic of a player you are. But we don't want to be sipping margaritas in April or May in Cancun or, you know, in the Caribbean where my parents are from in Barbados. We want to be playing. We want people watching us. And to do that, we have to play a team-first game. And I think Barzal is a great, great shining example of that right now, a young player that has really evolved his defensive game and his complete game. And learning now, it's like he's unlocking the puzzle that is the Stanley Cup playoffs in terms of how he has to play offensively within the team structure to have success. And as you said at the top of the interview, he's just taking this series over by storm. He's so fun to watch.
Absolutely, he is. And to your point, I've heard it said in other sports, before you can get people to care about where they're going, you got to prove you care about them. And that is at the heart of the story with Barry Trotz. And as you said, Lou Lamoriello as well. Kevin Weeks joining us here for a few more minutes this morning. With that in mind and looking for the synergy that obviously exists between Lou Lamoriello, Barry Trotz, and his group, the New York Rangers, another one of your old teams, looking for a head coach right now. Chris Drury's in charge. Who do you see as the best fit for that organization?
Hands down, I'll just echo what I was talking to some people that are close to the situation about yesterday. Hands down, my man, Rod Brind'Amour, another BC native, my boy, Rod Brind'Amour. Hands down, it's not close. There's some other outstanding coaches out there, but, you know, I was privileged enough to play with Roddy. We had that family atmosphere in Carolina, which is why we went to the Stanley Cup final, and ultimately they ended up going back and winning it against the Edmonton Oilers. And look, when it's all said and done, I really believe that he is one of the best culture shapers in sports. The way he's able to shape culture, you know, I watched it firsthand and playing with him, work ethic beyond off the charts. A lot of the same traits that I was talking about with Lou and Trotzy. You know, Roddy exemplifies those things. He doesn't demand them of you. He shows them. He lives them. He breathes them. And his players love playing for him. The way he treats the staff, the trainers, all the equipment workers, medical, arena staff, everyone. He's just If I was, I said this on the NHL Network, what are we today? Thursday? I think I said this Monday, and then when they were eliminated the other night. If I was the Rangers, I would back up 4 Brinks trucks and drive them straight down to Raleigh. Roddy, what do you want? What's it going to take? Blank check, and we got all the cash here, whatever you want. Because he's that transformative of a coach in person. And quite frankly, a great leader. You look at what he's done in Carolina. They took way too long to make him the head coach. And they finally did, to their credit. And you've seen the results in the last 3 years. So many players have flourished under him. So many people have flourished under him. And I'll say what I said on TV, on our network. The fact that it's gotten this far, it's a head-scratcher. It's almost as though it's a never-ending audition. And believe me, I know what that's like. He proved himself 80 million days ago. Like, I don't even understand why they don't have him on a fair market value contract. He's making entry-level player money to coach that team. It's a head-scratcher. So I know for a fact, be it the Rangers and about 3 other clubs that are salivating right now, that are looking and waiting to see if he's going to re-sign. And even if he does re-sign, it's going to be way under market values. And they just took too long to sign him and appreciate him. So if, I don't know, man, if I'm him or if I'm another club, you mentioned the Rangers, I think he'd be an amazing fit here in Broadway. He'd be awesome. For all the really good young players, plus Panarin that they have, who's top 5 player in the world, Adam Fox, I think, is going to win the Norris for them. They've got a lot of great pieces now. Zibanejad, their goalies are good, even with my boy Henrik not playing there anymore, as in Lundqvist. I think that'd be an amazing – he's the guy. How about I say that? Definitively, he's the guy.
Bidding war that would ensue between the Rangers, Seattle, where Ron Francis is, potentially Buffalo. Exactly. If he went to market, boy, would it shake up the NHL coaching fraternity, because most people out there believe – that he's so loyal to the market and the organization that he'll just take whatever to stay as long as they take care of his assistants. But if he gets on the open market, man, it's anybody's game.
Let me tell you, to your point, all I know is right now, all I can say is they're about north of $3 million off, like discount bargain shopping of what they should be paying him in relative terms, of course. And and that's to stay. You compound that by 5 years, you're talking north of $15 million discount. Like, I don't know where that is, but I certainly don't get that where I shop. I don't know about you guys or any of the listeners. That's a huge percentage off. So you're right. If he gets to market, I mentioned a 5, you know, and an average number in a 5, I would certainly go way north of that. And I think teams, at least 2 teams that I've spoken to, would be open to going way north of that. And I got to tell you, every dollar that they spend, it's still going to be a discount. And here's another person, because I heard you guys talking hoops at the start of it. Like, look at what Steve Nash has done here in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look, and if you know Steve Nash, you know his family. You know, obviously, I know Manny for years, and Manny's a part of their family too. They're blended family and stuff, married to his sister. And you look at Steve Nash, you look at how he carries himself, you look at the class, how great of a player he was, how much he's influenced the game, how much he's influenced culture. He's Canadian / British or South African, but he's a very worldly guy. The way he treats people, conducts himself, and he's had an amazing year so far in Brooklyn. And I've talked to numerous people in that organization, and everybody raves about what he's done. So not dissimilar. You got one guy on the hardwood in him and another guy behind the bench on the ice as 2 BC guys. And I really think that he's done an amazing job, Steve Nash has, and I could speak to Roddy too, because obviously I know both of them, but I played with Roddy. Any team that grabs him, this could be the epic demise of the Carolina Hurricanes, as much as I hate to say that, having played there and having special times there. In the event that they don't re-sign him properly, it could be the demise of their franchise, and I don't say that lightly at all.
Well, you're preaching to the choir out here. A lot of time for Rod Brind'Amour. I am part of Nash Nation. Followed him wherever he went as a player. Same deal as a coach. Yeah. I hope Brooklyn wins for that reason specifically. Kevin, awesome stuff, man. Thank you very much for making time for us here today. Excellent interview. Continued success for you, and I'd love to do this again soon.
Appreciate you guys having me, man, and thanks to all the fans out there in BC. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay positive. I know it's kind of tough times, but just try to stay as positive as you can. We all need that right now.
Well said. Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for having me.